you know, the government to control the narrative. And, you know, we've had, you know, Consortium News and your website, I believe. I mean, a lot of websites came under attack by Proper Not, you know, this really shadowy outfit. I mean, it's so ironic, I think. I mean, they've maintained anonymity. They, from a place of total anonymity, we don't know who they are. Well, we have an idea. You know, I think it's probably, you know, the Atlantic Council or, you know, some of these groups working together. You know, but they came out with this sort of blacklist of, you know, Russian propaganda websites with no, you know,
we're all living in America,
evidence and no methodology.
We're all living in America, America, America. We're all living in America, America, it's wunderbar. We're all living in America, America, America. Wenn ihr tanzt, wird will ich führen, auch wenn ihr euch alleine dreht. Lasst euch ein wenig kontrollieren. Ich zeige euch, wie es richtig geht. Wir bilden einen lieben Reigen. Die Freiheit spielt auf allen Geigen. Musik kommt aus dem Weißen Haus. Und vor Paris steht Mickey Mouse. We are
in, please.
Okay, we've had a problem here.
No transparency, but, you know, the Washington Post ran with that. And actually, I remember, you know, my dad, you know, so Consortium News was listed on that. And that came out right after the election in 2016. And I remember talking to my dad about that because, you know, he was targeted. And his feeling was, you know, that this was something that they were rolling out, you know, as part of that. You know, they expected Hillary Clinton to win. Yeah. And that, so they were going to go with this, all this, this Russiagate stuff, regardless of whether, you know, they thought Hillary was going to win, and, you know, so they were going to go with this Russia narrative with Hillary, but then of course Trump won, so they sort of changed it a bit, but all of this stuff has been, you know, in the works, you know, and it's a, you know, way to, yeah, shut down independent media and controversialize. I mean, this is what they do. I mean, they try to make people controversial, and, you know, like they've done it to Julian Assange, obviously. Right. I mean, you can't even say his name in polite, you know, conversations without sort of getting a, you know, when they've targeted somebody to that extent, I mean, they've made it so toxic, and they're doing that with a lot of websites, and they lump people together. You know, I mean, Jimmy Dore was lumped in with, you know, neo-Nazis and sort of, you know, in this, there's a CNN article that tried to, you know, paint them all with the same brush as, you know, conspiracy theorists. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, it's clear. And, you know, one of them, you know, things that a lot of YouTubers point out is that with the media being so bad, you know, you're going to have, you know, independent media that will become more popular. And I think that's what, I mean, people don't trust the media because it really is, you know, it really is bad. You know, it's not doing its job. So you're going to have people looking for the truth, you know, and that's what's happened over the years. And so they're going to try to shut that down.
Yeah. And, but it's ironic. We've become dependent on YouTube, for example, which is part of the corporate media.
Mm-hmm,
so we had this hope of getting our point of view across, but using some of the same platforms, which have now turned against us. And we are, unfortunately, dependent on them. So that is one of the ironies of our situation. But you also talked about Proper Not and Consorting News and Black Agenda Report. And I think it's some 200 sites were listed. Proper Not, that story was only carried by the Washington Post. And I don't think that's a coincidence. The Washington Post is solely owned by Jeff Bezos. And it is an organ of the Democratic Party, of the establishment. So I don't think it's a coincidence that the story appeared there. Jeff Bezos, in addition to being the richest man in the world, and some say of all time ever, Amazon has contracts with the CIA. So we're talking about the deep state. We're talking about the surveillance state that spread this story and point out right after the election, which upended, first of all, the predictions of everybody, Democrats, Republicans, everybody thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. And so then they were in this situation where they wanted to tamp down the ability of anybody to communicate, to distribute information outside of their purview. And so they have to, in a sense, they have to demonize sites like ours. They have to try to find some way to clamp down on this ability that they gave us to be able to communicate freely. So it really did make sense. And that's a quandary that we're now in, is how to end this dependence we have on platforms that can shut us down. And that, mm-hmm. you mentioned Venezuela analysis, they disappear from Facebook, but then they bring them back. Or RT, I love the disclaimer they have for RT videos on YouTube. RT is run by the Russian government. But if you look at a BBC video, it's a lot more benign. It says the BBC is publicly owned or something. It's the same thing, but without that little bit of negativity that they have for RT. What do you think about that? About our ability to both use but not depend on these platforms that can so quickly be turned against us?
Well, it is a dilemma, isn't it? I mean, in order to reach people, I mean, you have to go where people are, and they are on these platforms. I mean, I know there are some alternatives that have popped up. I mean, there's Vimeo and Steemit, and I think it's hard to predict, how it will play out, but there are possibilities, I guess, for alternatives. With Facebook, I think it's almost becoming so cumbersome that it's not worth using. I mean, I had a blog for some years. I was kind of in hiatus. It's called Compliance Campaign. The idea was pushing for U.S. compliance with international law. So I was sort of document.
So, Nat Perry, N-A-T, and the son of Bob Perry, and at the Joe Lurie Consortium News event, I mentioned to friend that, as Bob did, you like go along with the double, they'd come back from the dead to put the second bullet in your head, being suicided of Gary Webb's, then you get your family spared. So Consortium News is running along, and part of the Unity for Jay. Now, of course, I shouldn't bring it up in the context here, except that it's sort of a little entertaining story. They really know how to hurt you, and the fact that that is what not like, if you have, like, pretty much as a solitary soul without dependence, I've been able to climb up on the axle of a worker bus. And when the the prosecutor says, oh, that's, like crazy and blah, 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 suicidal, I'm able to argue, it's self-reconstructive. It's not self, it's self-destructive. It's constructive of, who I and I really am. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, back to the Unit for Jay thing, but, what was that? Oh, dang, I'll come back on that, but.
You meant all the violations of U.S. international law. It got too hard to keep up with after a while. It's like every day we violate international law. But I was using, that was my model. I was like, okay, I try to get as many followers as I can on Facebook and Twitter, and that's how I was trying to build it up. But with Facebook, I realized this was years ago before, all this deplatforming really started taking off. But
But there's no news about RT cable being scrubbed from the New York area, as it has been in the D.C. area since April. When if you look for the news, you get the news from April, but you will get some. This is no longer available on the channel New York for RT. Now, of course, BBC doesn't have to register a foreign agent. Twitter doesn't have to register as for a foreign agent, even though if you wanted to tweet about the Podesta emails, and those were about the head-chopping, child-raping, jihadi death squads of the Contra War, the Contra Revolucionarios that never stopped, okay? Clinton being the Mina Coke stand attendants and the Guns for Drugs scandals that Iraqgate got them out of. Remember, there's a picture of Christopher Dragool in critical mass at the nuclear site in Iraq. And so, you know, like the apartheid state gets to bomb them, but, you know, like we're arming both sides in this turf war. Anyway, Critical Mass has this information about the $5 billion in agricultural credits. Now, you see Ken Starr stretching his arms across the Commerce Department doors, blocking the investigation. Ken Starr is going to look at a cum stain on a blue dress, just the way we get Pissgate, okay? The golden showers that the Dixiecratic, slave-raping asshole motherfuckers of this hellhole America founded the year after the UK banned the slave trade. Okay, the Dixiecratic war machine, the Southern Man, and all those guys. So they're playing this. Lincoln's assassinated, 1876. They give up Reconstruction, and so the Republicans keep power by going back to the money bags, turning it into wage slavery, and
they were already doing. They play games, with they want you to boost your posts. You can have, whatever, 1,000 followers or however many you have, and your followers aren't going to see your content, like, unless you pay Facebook a little extra.
And while the schmucking chief Zuckerberg sits down with this monster who's telling his generals, yeah, we're going to kill Yemenis, so they shiver for generations at the name Saud. He is having the Nemo, the NATO press officer from the Atlantic Council. Atlantic is in the A, asshole motherfuckers in yeah. NATO. Okay, he is scrubbing Facebook so that a UK ambassador gets called Russian, okay, under this schmuck-in-chief Zuckerberg motherfucker Facebook bullshit that they're talking about.
For that boost. I gave up with that. I mean, I'm not going to pay them, for creating content that you put on their platform. And this is, to me, I think,
No, you can't think, because if you do, you'll get the same stroke your dad did at the same time the Devil's Chessboard author did. Okay, so the two strokes. Nate Perry's dad, Bob Perry, died from his stroke, but the Devil's Chessboard author, who's still around, catch up by way of Tim Redmond, if you want to hear about the local author, that simultaneous strokes, okay? Kind of a message, huh? Nate Perry is running consortium news because the Salon.com wouldn't publish Bob Perry's exposés. So even though the establishment journalist, he got slightly less version of the stroke because it didn't kill him. Or maybe they followed up. Maybe they both got the stroke and then they followed up with the heart attack or whatever would be undercover of this. I don't know. I'm just
wondering. Bob will probably find
very
that.
Rude, but hey.
It's a scam, me. And you're not gonna want to participate in it. So, and we'll see how it plays out in the next few years, I guess. But it's possible that there may be alternatives that start popping up, and people might just say forget Facebook. And yeah, I don't know. It's I don't know. What do you think? I mean, do you have any?
I know people are. It's a dilemma because Facebook is in effect a monopoly. It is occasionally these other sites pop up and people say, let's go to MeWe or let's go to VK, or, but you don't get the reach that Facebook has.
Yeah.
With millions of people all over the world, but then it's less and less useful. The shadow banning. I know people who've been shadow banned. Their posts are just not seen by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or they decide that they're going to kick a group off, or they listen to the Atlantic Council, or the Israeli government tells them who to kick off. Palestinian groups are kicked off Facebook all the time. Many of them are already gone. I think it's something that we need to take some time in thinking about. I think sometimes we also may need to go backwards. I think we need to make sure that we can communicate with people away from Facebook, away from Facebook Messenger. There are people I've only communicated with through Facebook Messenger or through Twitter direct messages. And then I realized I have no other way to get in touch with them. I don't have a phone number. I don't have an email address. So something that we have to think about. We may be deplatformed. We may choose to be deplatformed. And I think we have to look ahead and maybe go backwards to think about how best to make these things happen, because these are a problem for us.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to ask you, you live abroad, and I want to ask you about the Julian Assange story and what is being said about that in other countries. How does he get attention? And if so, what's being said about him there?
Well, I guess it's probably similar to the U.S. or any other country. I mean, there are certain circles, I guess, that, you know, follow his case and are engaged on these issues and would be informed. And then there's other the general public. I'm not sure how much people follow it. And it's also, I mean, personally, I find, because this saga has drawn out so long. I mean, it's been so many years. It's it's hard to stay engaged on a daily basis. So, when there's something, a major development that might take place, people, might talk about it a bit more. I remember actually when, WikiLeaks started, when the big leaks came out in 2010, I suggested, because the organization I work for, the OSCE, I'm with the Parliamentary Assembly, so we bring together 323 members of parliament from all over North America, Europe, and Central Asia. And we have three times a year, we have a big conference. And so I remember when that big story broke, I suggested for one of our debates, like, why don't we debate, WikiLeaks? And, the reaction I got from my boss, because, we have some ability to sort of set the program for the themes of the debate. And I said, what about this WikiLeaks? And the reaction I had was, well, I don't think any of our members, everyone would probably agree that, that WikiLeaks is sort of a bad thing, or I forget exactly how he put it, but that it, I guess the point I'm making is, like, in certain circles of, government, sort of elite circles. Yeah. I'm not sure how popular he is. I don't know. I mean, I guess I haven't talked extensively with everyone about it, but, I mean, at least when I made that suggestion over, having a debate on WikiLeaks, it was really like, yeah, that's probably not going to, it's not going to be much of a debate, because, our members probably would all sort of agree that this is a bad thing because they're part of the government, they have their, whatever. But it's, so I guess it's similar, I would imagine, to the U.S. here in Denmark. I mean, you have activists, transparency advocates, who are very, engaged. And then, the broader public, I mean, I don't know how much time they really spend thinking about it. I was actually in Australia. My wife has family in Australia. And so we were there last summer in Australia, winter here. And I was asking around in Australia with my in-laws, you know, like, what do you think about Julian Assange? And they didn't really have much of an opinion. So I was a little disappointed that, but I think, you know, it's sort of like, you know, some people are, you know, engaged and others aren't. And it just depends on who you talk to, I guess.
Yeah, but it's interesting to me in countries that where the word democracy is beaten over our heads all the time, here in the United States, and I'm assuming in Europe too, in Australia, we're democracies of the West, democracies. And but they have ways of disappearing people. You know, Julian Assange has been literally disappeared, and that means he's disappeared from public consciousness. And then they work, these governments work together because they, as you point out, they don't want any of these secrets revealed. So what does that say about democracy and what I think the word ought to mean? And how much do we really have?
Oh, I guess it depends on how much access to, you know, the truth we have. This is like what I've heard from my father growing up, you know, as long as I can remember, that, you know, the way he saw journalism was, I mean, it's very simple. You know, you give people the facts, you tell people the truth, and then it's up to the citizens to, you know, make the changes that need to be made and elect better leaders. And, you know, with that information, you're supposed to be able to make things better. And, but yeah, but something's not working, you know. It's like, that's been sort of, you know, pretty clear to me that, you know, it's, yeah, I'd hate to get, you know, despondent and, but, you know, it seems like we have so many people. I mean, what Black Agenda Report does and what Consortium News does and WikiLeaks, and you know, we have so many people doing all these great things and trying to tell the truth. And, you know, but then it's something just not, you know, but then it seems like everything just keeps sort of getting worse, you know? And so I do sort of, you know, wonder like what it is, are we doing something wrong, or is the, you know, is the system just so entrenched that it's, there's not much you can do? I mean, you can sort of push back. Well, I don't know. I mean,
I'm getting a message that we have to wrap up. And so I want to thank you first, but I want to say that you raise a good point as we say goodbye, that, we have to recognize the limits of what we do and think about some bigger actions that we might need to take in this system that is so entrenched and not likely to just give up on its own.
This as a weapon to not only to try to destroy his life, but to put him in a cage for a few years for telling us the fact that our government was torturing people. You know, it's sick. But it's a tool they use, and they've got the guns, so to speak. So, but our only weapon is openness and is dialogue, and is what we're doing, is blowing the whistle in our own way. So, you know, there's no reason to be too despairing, I guess.
What are your hopes going forward for resolving his situation?
Well, we closed our show out the other day with you know, for what we can do, which is a passionate appeal to Americans: contact your representative, contact your congressman. Tell them to put pressure. Contact the president. Call the White House. The president was buried as a candidate. Look at me and left.
No, here I am. I'm back. Hey, Daniel. Hey,
great to see you, old friend.
Good to see you.
Glad you joined us. We missed you the other weekend at the conference.
Yeah,
but I'm sure you did a great job up in New York. I'm sure you spread the word of peace. So,
well, thank you.
We'll press you into service next time. Looks like are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Good.
You are active. So anyway, we're here to spend a half an hour visiting about Julian Assange. I was telling Nat earlier that Dr. Paul and I did a show on Thursday about how the torture of Assange, you know, about not just the 6 years he's been forced to live in inhuman conditions, but, you know, think about these last few months where he's not even been able to get news from the outside world. You know, I saw several posts on Twitter. I'm sure you saw them too, Ray, that even prisoners in maximum security have more outside contact. And this fellow, this hero, this truth teller, who's done nothing wrong. What are your thoughts as things get worse, Ray?
Well, Daniel, as you know, when you say he's done nothing wrong, well, come on, he told the truth. I mean,
that's right.
Not only told the truth, but he used documentary evidence without treatment. Now, this is interesting because that phrase comes from Harry S. Truman, who set up the CIA for the express purpose of giving him analysis drawn from all agencies, therefore central, from the Central Intelligence Agency, quote, without treatment, end quote. Okay, what does that mean? That means that Julian, for example, takes these documents and he doesn't fool around with them. He orders them in a searchable form, which is a service to all of us, but then he puts them out and lets them speak for themselves. My God. Wow. And so on the 22nd of July, 2016, when he released the emails as he described them pertaining to Hillary Clinton, well, those were the real DNC Democratic National Committee and her own emails. Well, what did they say? Well, most Americans were deprived of what was in those emails because the headlines in the New York Times and the Washington Post all were, why did the Russians do this? Why did the Russians? Hey, it's an act of war. John McCain, it's an act of war. Why did the Russians do this? It was, there's a novel or a movie actually called Magnificent Obsession. Well, this was a magnificent distraction. They had from June 12th to July 22nd to figure out how they were going to handle this revelation, which amounted to showing how Hillary Clinton and the DNC stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders, pure and simple. I mean, you read the emails, please. But nobody read the emails because the headlines were all about what the Russians did. Wait, why did the Russians do this? And I had, privileged access to Jennifer Palmieri. Privileged access? Who's she? Oh, she was Hillary's PR person in charge of all the PR. Privileged access? I live in Washington. That way I can go to all manner of think tanks, including Podesta's and Hillary's think tank, the Center for Progress or something like that, American, whatever it was.
American Progress, yeah.
So I go to that, and here's Jennifer Palmieri. This is just about 2 months after the election. And she's saying, it was quite amazing. We were told to push the line at the Democratic National Convention, which was started on the 25th of July, 2016, to push the line that the Russians hacked into the DNC because they wanted Hillary to lose and they wanted Trump to win. Now, we had trouble selling that. I mean, I took a golf cart around to all the cable and the other outlets and I pushed it like I was supposed to. But even I had some, I mean, wow. And so that was the 25th and following of July. Now, when we got back to Brooklyn, of course, was Hillary Clinton's campaign headquarters. When we got back to Brooklyn, which was a week or two later, then intelligence sources and journalists in touch with intelligence sources began to fill out the picture and show how the Russians had hacked. And then the Obama administration would confirm this or that little detail. Then we were off and running. Okay, now she said all that, and she also wrote a big article for the Washington Post on it. So she's proud of how she diverted attention at Hillary's behest from what was in those emails. Because after all, if Bernie Sanders had what we would all like to see in the terms of backbone, he would have read the emails or had somebody read them for him, and he would have insisted on an open convention. Now, I don't know much about U.S. politics. Maybe that's wrong. But for him to tuck tail and for all his delegates to say, oh, now we vote for Hillary. Oh, sure, we'll support Hillary. Well, I'll finish up by saying there was one apparent Bernie Sanders worker who did go to work for Hillary out of some sort of duty to the Democrats. And then he or she, I don't know who it was, read the emails. I could just see them, you know, these young... Holy expletives. Yeah, this is somebody's got to know about this. Like, everybody's got to know about this. What he does, and this is not 100% proven, but pretty much forensically proven. What he did, what he or she did, was stick a little thumb drive into his or her computer, download the DNC emails, get in touch somehow with Julian Assange's folks, and got them to Julian Assange. Now, what is other evidence that that's the way it happened? I'll tell you. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, 2 days before he left office, he had a press conference. And he asked them about this. And he said, and I quote, the conclusions of the intelligence community with respect to how Russian hacking got to WikiLeaks are inconclusive, period, close quote. Well, so we got inconclusive conclusions just 12 days after Obama was briefed on this poor excuse for an intelligence assessment, which said not only that they did it, not only that they gave it to WikiLeaks, but Putin himself ordered all this stuff, you know? So 12 days after that, after Obama is told what to say, for some reason, he tells a half-truth, namely that the U.S. intelligence community doesn't have the foggiest idea as to how a hack like this got to Julian Assange. And my NSA colleagues and veteran intelligence professionals for sanity assure me that the Ecuadorian embassy in London is covered, as they call it, cast iron, okay? That means that no signal gets in there, no signal gets out of there, and I'm sure the same is true for coverage of Julian's, the people who work with Julian. So, you know, please, it wasn't a hack, it was a leak, and the reason I go back to the emails is because those emails were incredibly damaging. They should have cost Hillary Clinton the nomination, and then, my God, can you think of it? And then we wouldn't have this clown, Donald Trump, as president. Whose fault is it? Well, you know, I wouldn't blame the Russians. No evidence there. How about Hillary Clinton, you know? You know, if she hadn't cheated that way, if she hadn't been proven to cheat that way, despite the best efforts of the FBI to disguise this and let her off free, we would have Bernie Sanders as president of the United States. In my view, again, I'm no political expert on internal affairs, but it seems to me clear that that's what would have happened.
You know, Ray, that reminds me of all of our foreign interventions. You know, to stop Iran, we invade Iraq, we destabilize Syria, and what happens? Iran comes out on top. So to try to prevent a Sanders presidency, we get a Trump presidency. So. They always seem to screw it up, don't they?
Well, they do, unless, you know, this is really, really cynical. But there are people that profiteer on these mistakes, people that manufacture arms.
You're shocking me, Ray. You really are.
What's that?
I said you're shocking me. I can't believe it. I was just in Washington for our conference, a couple of weeks ago, and every time I go back there, I'm astonished. And how, you know, it used to be that the military-industrial complex built its buildings way out by Dulles. Now you're in Arlington right by the freeway, and there's massive Pentagon City, Crystal City, massive multi-story buildings, Raytheon, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's got to be some profit in this, I think.
Well, Daniel, I have to tell you that I've been in Washington for 55 years now. Rosslyn, which is part of Arlington right across the river, now is one of these magnificent tall building Raytheon BAEC, all call it Grumman and everything. And when I first moved there, it was comprised of two pawn shops and stations. I kid you not. So, you know, here's tangible evidence that the Arlington County Board is really smart in getting all this money from these high roller agencies, keeping our home taxes down. But my God, what does it reveal? And as you say, not only going out to Dulles Airport, see all these. Now, half of our spending goes to military uses. And why can't people understand that? Why people, when they're paying their taxes, why don't they realize that, you know, half of this is really, or almost half of it is really unnecessary? We have to educate the people better. We have to find ways to break into their consciousness and say, you're being had.
Yeah.
It's not for you to live this way, you're being had.
It's, you know, problems of patriotism. Middle America, the people, the blue-collar workers are being sold a cheap flag and told that that's what's patriotic. And in reality, half of their money is going to the war machine while their kids don't have any insurance. You know, they don't have any retirement. The roads are falling apart. The bridges are falling down. But, hey, by God, we got to spend $1 trillion a year on those, you know, getting rid of those bad guys overseas. Yeah. It's a problem of breaking through the propaganda. And Ray, honestly, I don't know how to do it. I wish there was a magic pill to do it.
You know, this came into bas relief in the last few days. John McCain is gone. Oh my God, what are we going to do? Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times shedding abundant tears. Now, John McCain is the paradigm of the military-industrial congressional complex. And guess what? He used that phraseology in a speech. Quote, military-industrial congressional complex, end quote. McCain. Now, who would know better?
Yeah, in a good way he used it, I'm sure.
What's also lacking, Daniel, is any moral leadership. Now, I'm a Catholic, and I like Pope Francis, some of the things about Pope Francis. He's better than his predecessors. Let's damn him with faint praise, okay? Now, he comes to Congress almost 3 years ago now, and he says, the main problem is the blood-drenched arms traders. God, before Congress, right? So yeah. They all get up, you know, like almost like for Bibi Netanyahu. And they're all back. And then if you look close, Daniel, you can see they check their vest pockets to see if the last envelope from Lockheed is there and from Raytheon is there. I mean, it was giving hypocrisy a bad name. Now, why do I raise that? Well, I raise that because that gave me some hope. There's some moral. There's a person who, maybe until last week, could pretend to have some moral leadership. What happens? Well, about a month later, Donald Trump's going to visit the Vatican. And McGovern is saying, oh, man, this is going to be great. Francis is going to tell him what he told the Congress, you know. Maybe he'll tell him not to come. Instead, the president visits Saudi Arabia and concludes the biggest, most expensive arms deal in the world's history, right? Next stop, the Vatican. So I'm still hopeful, you know. I mean, what more provocation does Francis need, right? So Pope walks in, and my liberal Catholic friend said, did you see what Francis did? I said, what do you mean? He didn't smile for the first three photo ops. How about that? Oh, God! You know, he says, oh, yeah, what? What did he do later? Well, then he smiled, and then he shook. I said, what else did he do? And he said, oh, yeah, he gave Trump an encyclical. Now, I don't want to demean the encyclical because it was a good one. It was about climate change. It was about global warming. Okay, and it would be nice if Trump at least read the first couple pages. But what did that harken back to me? That harkened back to me, the experience of World War II. Now, I was alive during that whole war. I was very, very small. But I remember reading after the war that a group of Dominicans at a monastery in southern France asked Albert Camus to come and talk to them about his experiences during the war. And they asked him, "What did you think of the role of the church?" And Camus said, "You will be surprised to hear this because you know I'm an agnostic or an atheist, but I kept waiting for a word from Rome. Yes, my friends and I kept waiting for a word from Rome. No unambiguous word came from 1933 till the end of the war. So now my friends tell me later that no, there was word from Rome." And I said, "I didn't hear it." And they suggest it came in the form of an encyclical. And so I, Albert, said, "What is an encyclical?" And they explained this is a top document, the most authoritative of the Pope. And so I said, if I didn't know what an encyclical was, much less knowing that there was an encyclical during the war, whose fault is that? Now, the link here. So Trump is given an encyclical. It's a good one. It's about the quintessential problem we face. It's about my 9 grandchildren not being able to have clean water or clean air when they get to be my age. It's good, but it's a little late and it's a little beside the point when Francis has already gone on record as identifying the main problem, and that is the military. I use this: military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media, academe complex. That's what it is now. All of those things.
You could add think tank in there too, I think, Ray, by the way.
What's that?
I think you could almost add think tank in there as well. There are such a proliferation of particularly foreign-funded think tanks. Ironically, those of us who those of them who want to suss out foreign meddling, they're certainly happy to let foreign-funded think tanks like the Atlantic Council be their guides.
But, you know,
you make a good point about moral culpability, and we live in an age where it's difficult to articulate this. But what about the moral culpability of, you know, and I'm a Catholic too, Ray, a devout Catholic, of fellow Catholics who are participating in the military industrial complex, who are building bombs? That seems like a very difficult question. To me, it doesn't, but I struggle over it.
Yeah, you're right about that. You put your finger on it. It's the whole economic thing. You know, what will I do if I leave my job at Lockheed? You know? And I know several friends who have wrestled with this, and precious few have made the courageous decision. Look, I have incredible talent and experience. I can certainly find a job, you know? Yeah. So if we lack people with the courage of Matthew Ho, for example, former Marine captain in Iraq, and then high-level State Department official in Kabul, Afghanistan. He doesn't pay his taxes. He doesn't pay his taxes, okay? Now, I'm not sure it's all the taxes, but he doesn't pay the 50% that goes to the war machine. That's guts, you know? I haven't been able to summon that guts. I'd like to be able to. And we all have, you know, these vested interests where we're kind of handcuffed by the prosperity that we as white, some of us males, at least white favored people, have. And so as long as Trump and Obama before him and Bush before him are creating havoc in lands far away with people who don't look like me, it's somehow easier. And that, of course, is raw racism, what I consider to be the original sin of our country. I mean, look what we did to the Native Americans. So those people don't look like us.
Would have done what he does. He's a journalist. And he would have revealed anything that in material that came his way, however it came to him and from whomever. But you know, telling the truth is inconvenient there. He has to be demonized in order to explain away this political earthquake of the Trump victory.
it's a selection under the black box frack 3/5 slave state electoral college system. The president is selected, obviously. It's like black box, right? So just jumping back on the Unity Forest 11-hour vigil, the YouTube, it's a hashtag Unity, the number 4, capital J. And jumping from Ray McGovern back to Margaret Kimberly at about the 1 hour point.
And it has worked all
for the rest of our show. Go back next Tuesday at noon for bad news and horror. Yes, yes, yes.
The campaign is so ubiquitous about Assange, about Russia, about, and so much of it is untrue. One of the things I think you were talking about when I couldn't get on was about Gareth Porter proving that these charges of Russian hacking of state elections was a lie and concocted starting with the Obama administration. So this is why we need Julian Assange to be free. And not only is it the right thing to do, but we have to have people to expose this, to expose the wrongdoing, the corruption from corporate interests, from governments, from mere collusion together, from the collusion with corporate media. It's funny that Trump says the media are the enemy of the people. Now, he just says that because they don't play ball with him if they criticize him. And if he was smarter and if he curried favor with them, they would curry favor right back. But I don't want to quote Trump, but it is true. And I don't say it for the reason he says it. The corporate media are our enemy. They are in march in lockstep with powerful interests against the rest of us. And they lie all the time. And that's why they don't like Julian Assange. That's why he's been pretty much disappeared from corporate media in the U.S. these days. They don't talk about him very much, except to, you know, occasionally bring him up and blame him for Hillary Clinton's defeat. So we have this situation where people who would have defended him before now, he's now the enemy too in this horrible propaganda campaign. But that's why we need him. And, you know, in this persecution of him, it has several purposes. One, it's to obviously to punish him. The other purpose is to make sure that nobody else gets the idea of doing the same thing, because no one wants to go through what he's gone through. So they silence him. They silence anybody else who might consider doing the same thing and revealing the same things. And so it all works together in this really malignant way to silence so much dissent. And it's so funny to me how we always talk about democracy. Americans love to talk about democracy, and they let us vote. I guess, you know, that makes a country a democracy, sort of. But we now have this other layer of control of corporate media. Social media is corporate media. And they have gone along, too. Black Agenda Report is one of those websites that has suffered in the wake of Russiagate. Russiagate's being used to minimize our access to the public. So if you do a Google search for articles we used to have, fewer and fewer eyes get to see them. And I know you've gone through this as well. Now you have Facebook. They're going to use they are using the Atlantic Council, this right-wing semi-governmental agency to determine what is and what is not fake news and what they will and will not allow to be posted. People are being ghost banned. Sites are being mysteriously removed, and sometimes they reappear, sometimes they don't. But it's all part of a larger effort. And if Julian Assange were free to, he would talk about it. And that's another indication of why they keep him in prison. And there was apparently even some discussion about some deal being made, which James Comey squashed. This man who is the hero of the so-called resistance made sure that Assange didn't, that there was no talk of Assange going free. So we have a lot of people that we have to reveal their motives, and we have to name and shame.
You're right to bring up Atlantic and Google, and this is censorship by proxy. Of course, the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution does not allow government to censor the news. They cannot use prior restraint to stop people from publishing anything, but they could get and put pressure on Facebook, Google, Twitter, as they have done in open congressional hearings, actually badgering these CEOs to do more to stamp out what they are calling Russia propaganda, which is actually information and news and analysis that is critical of the leadership of both the Democrats and the Republicans. And like any tin pot dictator around the world, whenever there's legitimate social unrest, legitimate criticism for legitimate problems, you blame a foreign power. You blame the Russians in this case. And this has happened since the beginning of civilization. And this is what we're seeing right now, where the people are getting fed up with 30 years of these neoliberal policies. And they've got to do something to stamp it down, to keep that from bubbling up and causing them problems, creating that mass movement that Susie and I was discussing. They do not want this. They need to stay in power. They need to shut the people up. And here comes WikiLeaks revealing what they've done. And critical media online is being deranked. It's absolutely the CEO of the parent company of Google, Eric Schmidt, said so last year. They were going to derank ish stories from Russia, Russian media, for example. So when Trump says a lot of things that we could agree with, but not for the reasons he says, unfortunately. Like, he says it's the enemy of the people because they're attacking him. He doesn't give a damn. My opinion about us, about the people, some about himself. He's just using rhetoric. But even they really are the enemy of the people, as you described. And this is, you know, also in terms of you brought up the white supremacy issue before. Now, you know, Trump is being criticized for a lot of things. But when it comes to bombing Syria or to backing white supremacists, you know, we don't hear as much. It's all about his connections with Russia mostly, right? Why is that? Why won't they go into more detailed criticism of his support for billionaire tax cuts? Maybe because Democrats are billionaires too, for example, or you know, torture. Maybe some of them still support torture. Why is it always just this Russia issue when there's so many damn things to criticize Trump about?
Well, you just said it yourself. You know, what did Obama say? We tortured some folks. He said, you know, some commented about what has become normalized. It's Obama, you know, speaking of quashing dissent, it's Obama who used the Espionage Act from 100 years ago to prosecute journalists. He prosecuted more people than all of the, I believe all of the presidents combined. And people silent. So that's the kind of thing that Obama did. But Obama worked in sync with powerful interests. It's funny. I hear people say Obama never had a scandal. I said, well, that's just proof that the media covered for him. So they are all pro-war. Obama changed the invasion of Iraq. That's something they don't want to try to do again. So there's war by proxy. So there's sanctions, which is war by other means. So there's drone warfare. So you use jihadist proxies in Libya or in Syria. And they, because they do the same things, they don't want to bring up those things because, well, then you'd have to talk about you mentioned the tax cut. The tax cuts, Bush's, the first round of tax cuts rich people under Bush were temporary. Obama made them permanent.
That's right.
So they're in a bind there. The number of issues where they can really point out a difference are smaller and smaller. But it's Trump's lack of how do I want to say, lack of charm, which also makes him an easy
You're target. Being very kind there.
He's such a, you know, he's such a vile person that he doesn't have any, there's no veneer with him. So with other presidents, their wrongdoing, you could say, oh, doesn't he, looks like a nice guy, or he loves his wife, or, you know, something positive about that person. Trump, there's no positive. So it's harder for him to get away with doing the same things. And it's obvious that if you speak well, if you don't say stupid things, if you're not blatant with your racism or your imperialism, you can get away with anything. And that's the lesson of Trump. He can get away with less because of the person that he is. And it's a very, very sad comment that, you know, Obama's being lifted up as this perfect being because he knew how to behave in public. You know, it's like he made friends with the right people. Former CIA director Brennan and Trump taking away his security clearance. Well, Brennan, and let's not forget, these guys are bipartisan. They work for Democrats, they work for Republicans. So Brennan, he was one of the people, he was the kill list guy. And now he's being lifted up as this resistance figure when he was the one who worked with Obama every week to decide who they were going to murder, including American citizens. And that's just swept under the rug because, and then of course, Brennan is part of that team that were surveilling Trump, who were spying on Trump. So he has to join in this chorus of Russiagate to try to protect himself. But that's what we have. We have neoliberal murdering imperialists with good manners or bad manners. And the ones with the better manners manage to get away with a lot more. Yeah, but you say that.